When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And I want to talk a little bit today about the Democratic National Convention of 1968, the events that surround it and the implications of those events. The convention of the Democratic Party to decide who would be the presidential candidate in the 1968 election to succeed Lyndon Johnson came in the middle of a year of immense political violence and chaos. In April, the civil rights leader Martin Luther King had been assassinated, and in June, Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. And Lyndon Johnson had decided, following a humiliation in the Democratic Party's primaries, not to seek the presidential nomination. He comes forth in the New Hampshire primary, and this is an epic humiliation for a president that won the largest landslide victory of any president in US history. Just 4 years before, absolutely wiping the floor with Barry Goldwater. Now, if you want to know a bit more about that, you can go back a few podcasts and find the one on Goldwater that I did. Johnson was partly helped by the fact that Goldwater, an extreme right-wing libertarian, his ideas were out of step with the broad popular thinking in America at that time. But those ideas would see Ronald Reagan into the White House 2 decades later. Johnson was humiliated mainly by anti-war elements of the Democrat Party. He's humiliated particularly in 1968, as it's a year where the Vietnam War escalates in its seriousness and becomes a real feature in the kind of American public discourse. Up until 68, the Vietnam War had been rumbling on. For many Americans, it's something happening far away that doesn't seem to concern them very much. It's probably not a particularly great interest, and but perhaps something that ideally America either should be able to resolve quickly using its military power, or should absent itself from. But there's the intensity of feeling over Vietnam becomes a signature feature of American life in 1968, largely because between March and September that year, the Tet Offensive in Vietnam was underway. This was the a mass invasion by the North Vietnamese Army, assisted by Viet Minh guerrillas in the south. of South Vietnam. This was a bold and daring attack on dozens of South Vietnamese cities using the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And it takes the Americans by surprise. Viet Minh and the North Vietnamese Army are resoundingly defeated in the battlefield by the Army of the Republic of Vietnam and by the US forces. But the combined effect on the American audience back home, watching it, watching Walter Cronkite's TV reports, is one of bewilderment and fear and panic and a sudden realisation that this obscure and faraway peasant people are not going to give up, not even give up without a fight. They're not going to give up at all for any reason ever. The fear that this strikes into a country enjoying unprecedented levels of affluence and wealth is striking. This might be a question for sociologists or even psychologists as to why it is when countries become more affluent they tend to become less inclined to send their loved ones off to fight and die. But there was also a question mark hanging over the necessity of the cause in Vietnam. Anyway, Vietnam becomes a key feature of American life in 1968, partly because of the medium of television. And finally the ability of journalists, very well respected journalists like Cronkite, to go on the TV and say, "Well, I suspect we're not going to win this one, ladies and gents." Anyway, with Bobby Kennedy out of the picture and due to his untimely death, and Johnson's decision not to seek renomination. The nominee was Hubert Humphrey, and his vice presidential running mate was Edmund Muskie, and the two of them faced the more liberal duo of Eugene McCarthy and George McGovern. Now, the irony here is that Humphrey winds up getting the nomination, even though 80% of the primary voters had voted for anti-war candidates, of which McCarthy was the most significant. Now, it has been implied in the past that Johnson, whilst out of the race, did not want one of his fiercest critics, McCarthy, to succeed. Instead, he used his traditional skill for arm twisting and bringing pressure to bear and browbeating to make sure that Humphrey, his vice president, now had a clear shot at the at the nomination. Another figure of renown and sort of infamy at this point is the Democratic mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley, who is also thought to have wielded a great deal of influence throughout the primaries. Daley experiences rather an unfortunate set of problems during the convention, in that he believed that the media spotlight on Chicago would be a great way of him announcing the city under his leadership and showing what a Democrat city looked like. He thought it would be really, really quite impressive. However, the problem he has is the Youth International Party, the Yippies, the counterculture anarchists and general troublemakers in the eyes of the Democrats had descended upon the convention in order to protest against the Vietnam War. and the force arraigned to stop them was the decidedly reactionary Chicago police, along with the Illinois National Guard. And there's some interesting class dynamics happening here. The police, by 1968, and National Guardsmen, were not especially sympathetic to college students and young radicals, mainly of a middle to upper middle class background. These were, you know, these were working class guys, and the police, the National Guard, and other similar institutions, who looked upon the demonstrators as spoilt rich kids who didn't know anything about serving their country, patriotism, and all the rest, and they were they took about them with clubs and tear gas, and that's no small amount of enjoyment, one suspects. And there is this interesting class division that runs throughout Vietnam War protests. The working class construction workers who cheered Richard Nixon seem to be quite up for a fight within in Vietnam. Were referred by the New Left as hard hat fascists. The problem that the New Left always faced was this: is that in wealthy, advanced Western countries, where working class people had a certain reasonably good standard of living, it's very difficult to get them to be revolutionary. It's very difficult to get them to disobey the state, or to disagree, or even want to disagree with official policies, particularly military ones overseas. These are associated in the minds of the working class construction workers, police, and other such groups as being, you know, fairly positive things. Whilst you find many people in many working class people in America in trade unions, the trade unions themselves, the AFL and the CIO, what would previously be the Knights of Labour, these institutions are not radical at all. They're highly conservative with a small c, and they look after the interests of their members, but they don't have any wider kind of radical or emancipatory politics. They are, class war is not their thing at all. So it left the New Left kind of scratching their heads a little bit, thinking, well, you know, the core of support, the proletariat, this is, you know, Marx, the people that Marx always theorised would rise up in revolt against the system. Well, they love the system. And this is perhaps why the New Left from the 60s and 70s and even the 80s embraced really identity politics, you know, the struggles for black and gay and lesbian and female emancipation, hoping to build a kind of a progressive bloc of, you know, supposedly oppressed minorities. And that doesn't really happen either, really. But anyway, that's a whole other kind of series of.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Podcasts on why the left appears to have failed in the 20th century. Actually, my final digression. The podcast I did about two or three episodes ago on Antonio Gramsci has a lot to say on this subject, or more than what Gramsci did, not me. Anyway, contemporaries who were writing at the time of the Democratic National Convention in 68 referred to Chicago looking like an armed military camp, and the Students for a Democratic Society and the Youth International Party made vague and probably unfair comparisons between militarism in America and militarism in Vietnam. It's a slightly naive perspective, I suppose, because the militarism in Vietnam resulted in the deaths of about a million people in the Indochinese subcontinent, whereas the armed camp occupying Chicago, it was obviously connected to the anti-Vietnam War protests, but in no way comparable to Vietnam itself. So by August the 28th, 10,000 protesters had gathered in Chicago. There was a rally in the afternoon that day, and the Students for a Democratic Society encouraged the protesters to spread out throughout the city. It was believed that should Daley's police crack down on the protesters, they would have to do it on a citywide basis. This would generate maximum publicity for the protests and bring a state of kind of urban conflict to Chicago. This would presented the Democrats at the convention with a kind of an apocalyptic scenario. And it was the attack on the students, the protesters, that begins in the park, and the protesters respond by hurling missiles at the police. The results of the protests are shocking to the rest of America. Again, place this in the context of 1968, when senior political figures are being assassinated, the Tet Offensive is being broadcast, and there's a sense that the country is becoming almost ungovernable, that there is violence and chaos on the streets. Country's kind of divided, shocked at the actions of the police, who seem exceptionally violent, dragging students by their hair and protesters by their hair, beating them and throwing them in the back of vans, but also shocked at the activities of the protesters themselves, who appear to be attacking the police. The police, by and large, have the far the upper hand in terms of violence on the day. But the way in which the protests are presented suggests to many Americans that the anti-war protesters are the trouble, the instigators and the aggressors. And there is generally a sense of anxiety and confusion over why young people particularly appear to be, what one would call unpatriotic. Why it is young people would do anything as absurd as criticise or attack authority, and particularly the authority that is prosecuting an overseas war against this alien ideology of communism. protesters chant "The whole world is watching," and the whole world does appear to be watching. The verdict on the protests was drawn up in a document called the Walker Report, which concluded, this was led by Dan Walker, the governor of Illinois, and it concluded that, you know, the protesters had provoked the police. However, the police had reacted with enormous and disproportionate violence against the protesters, and had really used a huge amount of indiscriminate force, not just against protesters, but also against bystanders as well. So much so that Walker referred to the attacks as a police riot. The violence outside began to flow into the hotel, into the Hilton Hotel, where the convention was based. Partly through the actual amount of tear gas used, it began to sort of pour into the hotel. But also the pro-war and anti-war factions within the Democrat Party began to snipe at each other on the convention floor. Abraham Ribicoff, for example, from Connecticut, he is a McGovern supporter. And in nominating McGovern, he referred to what was outside, to what was happening as Gestapo tactics. And this was a clear dig named at Daley. And I find it interesting that the language of the new left, the language of the student movement, the Students for Democratic Society, you know, the Gestapo, talking about the police as Gestapo, as Nazis, as pigs, that kind of thing. It's really translating into the higher echelons of the Democrat Party itself. So it gives you a clue as to how kind of popularised some of these sentiments were. The effect of the convention was to gain an immense amount of support, not for the Democrats, but for the Republicans, particularly for Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, throughout 1968 and into 1969, pledged to restore order to America, and he pledged to restore not just kind of the rule of law and order, but the ideas and beliefs of what he referred to as a silent majority. The people in America who were bewildered and troubled by the pace of social and cultural change during the 1960s, who looked upon generation of protesters and radicals and members of the counterculture, and were bewildered by them and found, you know, life America a bewildering and unrecognisable place. It must be emphasised here that the archetypal long-haired hippie in San Francisco taking LSD with the Grateful Dead and turning up at Woodstock is a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion of the vast majority of young people in America, who the majority of whom, as with young people in Britain during the 1960s, lived very, very conventional, almost, you know, standardised, normal, conventional, unadventurous lives during the 1960s, who certainly didn't drop out or take LSD or anything like that. So the prevalence of this perception tells us a lot more probably about the media in America in the 1960s than it does about any kind of reality. And the riots at the Democratic National Convention only helped to reinforce that image. So perhaps the Democratic National Convention decided the upcoming election for Richard Nixon in the end of 68. The trial that followed the Democratic National Convention riot saw the prosecution of what's known as the Chicago Eight, which was Abby Hoffman of the Yippies, Tom Hayden of the SDS, Jerry Rubin, David Dellinger, Rennie Davis, John Foynes, Lee Viner, and interestingly Bobby Seale of the Black Panther Party. Bobby Seale was the only black activist to be tried in the Chicago 8 trial. They were charged with conspiracy and incitement to riot, all of which carry hefty, hefty sentences. In 1970, five of the defendants were convicted on a lesser charge of intent to incite a riot, but none were found guilty of conspiracy. Of the five that were sentenced to 5 years in prison, they were their convictions were reversed by the Court of Appeals in 1972, which sent out a kind of an interesting and powerful message about the Vietnam War era, just as the war is coming to a close, and about the almost the validity of protest. Whilst no one could openly suggest that the protests had been valid, it was implied that there were at least mitigating circumstances, and there were all sorts of irregularities with the trial. That it was implied that the judge might have been biased because defense attorneys were not allowed to screen the jury for possible cultural or racial bias. So there may have been people in the jury with their own preconceptions about the defendants. And if the cephology is correct on this one, that there had been a huge shift towards Nixon as a result of the Democratic National Convention, you can understand that perspective, that there would be people who would have been more than happy to send some hippies and a dangerous-looking black activist to jail. Okay, well, that's everything from me. I'm just going to let you know, if you are out there and you're a teacher, that my new newsletter, Outstanding History, can be downloaded at www.outstandinghistory.com/instant-access, and you'll get an initial hello gift of five lessons ready to roll on everything from civil rights to Stalin's Russia, and then weekly updates of everything that you need to know from the brilliant world of explaining stroke outstanding history, with lesson help and resources and ideas and plans and concepts and all the works. So sign up, and I'll catch you on either the next Explaining History podcast or the next Outstanding History newsletter. All the best. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.